From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm legendary anchorman Bill Curtis. And here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, filling in for Peter Sagal, Mike Pesca.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks, everybody. Thank you. I am Mike Pesca. I am host of a podcast called The Gist. I'm filling in for Peter Sagal. The Gist is about news and politics and whimsy. Remind you of a show you like. Anyway, I hate to have to do this, but I do need to start out with a correction of something that was said on this program last week. Peter reported a finding that there are tiny amounts of gold in our poop. Now, don't worry. That is true. There are tiny amounts of gold in the poop. But we misidentified the group who made this claim. It's not the U.S. Geological Society, it's the U.S. Geological Survey. They noticed our mistake. I don't know, somehow they're used to going through things with a fine-tooth comb. So they want you to know, when you think about gold in your poop, think about them, the U.S. Geological Survey. We won't misidentify you when you call in to play our games. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Now let's welcome our first listener contestant. Hello, you are on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, my name is Charlie Anthony, and I'm calling from Seattle, Washington.
Hello, Charlie. Thanks for joining us. What do you do there in Seattle?
I work at a large technology company that I'm sure you've heard of.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And is this technology company the only place in America where you're not allowed to use the verb to Google?
No, actually, I happen to do it quite often. I also happen to enjoy certain types of cherries from time to time.
Ah, bing. Now, Charlie, let's introduce you to our panel. First up, writer, humorist, rabble-rouser, and contributor to The Daily Beast, P.J. O'Rourke.
Okay.
Next, Charlie, we ask you to meet a comedian performing in Troy, New York, at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall on April 18th, Paula Poundstone.
Hey.
And a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, Adam Felber.
How you doing, Charlie?
All right, Charlie, we're going to play Who's Bill this time. Bill Curtis is going to read you three quotes from this week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you will win our prize, scorekeeper emeritus Carl Castle's voice on your voicemail. Are you ready, Charlie?
I am super excited to start, yeah.
All right, here's your first quote. It is from a governor named Mike Pence.
Was I expecting this kind of backlash? Heavens, no.
Governor Pence was talking about the backlash to a heavily criticized new law on the books this week in his state. What state?
Indiana.
That is correct. Indiana. People across the country are boycotting Indiana to protest their Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Some people think this law is a bad thing, but thanks to Mike Pence, people now have an excuse to get out of their upcoming trip to Indianapolis. And you know, both NASCAR and Walmart have come out against this law and a similar one in Arkansas. That is right, gay Americans. NASCAR and Walmart are with you. I'm going to say it's official. This is the straightest gay has ever been.
Mike, how do you boycott Indiana?
It is a useful state to travel through.
I have spent my entire life unintentionally boycotting Indiana.
Well, now in a production of Music Man, the adorable Winthrop takes the stage and sings, Erie, Pennsylvania, Erie, Pennsylvania, Erie, Pennsylvania. Was it Governor Pence?
Yeah.
Didn't he start saying like that people were not being tolerant of Indiana?
Yes. Yes.
I love it that he turned that word. You know, he took, you want to talk tolerance? You guys are being intolerant of Indiana.
Yeah, that's
the other thing. So the other thing that Pence did, he used the word Hoosiers a lot, if you noticed that in his press conference.
Yes.
It was the 13 times he said things like Hoosiers. Hoosiers are a loving, kind, and decent, and tolerant people. And I just think it would be cool if governors from other states used this gambit, right? Like the governor of Oregon saying, we know that we beavers don't discriminate. Beavers are a kind, hospitable sort. A beaver baker would never refuse to serve who choose to live an alternative beaver style. Beaver.
Exactly. Or California. We idiots.
We are tolerant idiots.
We're tolerant idiots.
Idiots are kind people.
Yeah. And you bring us a cup of water. We'll welcome you.
Charlie, here is your next quote. It's from President Obama.
It is a good deal.
Mr. Obama was, of course, talking about the all-you-can-eat shrimp deal at participating Red Lobsters. No, he was talking about the nuclear deal reached with what country Thursday?
Iran.
That's right, Iran. U.S. was actually able to reach a nuclear deal with Iran. If you're not familiar with Iran, they're sort of the Indiana of the Middle East. The terms of the deal were very specific. Okay, deal might be a bit of a stretch. They call this thing the framework for the outlines of a deal. They say that it's the basis of a framework for a deal. Like, it's a framework for a deal-like structure to begin shaping the pre-outline of the scaffolding of the blueprint of a sketch.
It's more of an inkling, really.
Iran will reduce its stockpile of low-enriched uranium, scale back its centrifuges, and in exchange, the U.S. will lift sanctions, and Zane will rejoin One Direction. There was the big facility there, which is the Fordow facility. They agreed that...
which is oddly not for profit.
It's not for profit, and it's not for making nukes anymore, they say. They will be turned into a nuclear research center and possibly a petting zoo.
There'll be... Where all the animals glow!
All right, for your last quote, Charlie, listen to these tweets. Just a sampling of many.
So sad I missed breakfast. On a hangover and too late for breakfast. 10:30 and I was denied breakfast. You are losing customers.
These poor souls are now rejoicing as WHO announced that they will now, at long last, serve breakfast all day.
Oh, God, please don't tell me it's McDonald's.
It is McDonald's. Yes, McDonald's. They're selling breakfast all day, right?
I actually...
Because they, like, never heard of IHOP.
Do you think... I think this came about when in the McDonald's boardroom, everyone was like, we need something that'll sell like hotcakes. Something, do you mean like literally like hotcakes? Yeah, we could go with that.
Well, we do sell hotcakes in the morning.
I'm one of those customers who've made a mad dash to the McDonald's only to find at 10:31 that we don't have the breakfast menu.
And I know you're not fibbing because that is the exact time they turn over the breakfast menu.
Oh, yeah, and they are tough as nails about it. You're like, yeah, I don't...
10:01, there goes the Egg McMuffin.
I always kind of crane my neck towards the back and go, isn't it? It's easy to just...
Is a sausage patty that different from a hamburger? I've tasted it, guys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't even want the meat. If I could just, if there's like an old egg or something...
So the stats are, last year, 2014, McDonald's profits fell by 15%, one of their worst years ever. They've been crowded out in the fast casual category by...
They were called fast casual?
That's what... Well, their competitors are. McDonald's is just called, you know, that old crappy
fast
McDonald's.
Food, yeah.
I was going to say, because I felt awful. I've been overdressing.
Bill, tell us, how did Charlie do in our
Charlie, everybody's a winner here, and he did very well. It helps if you're 3-0, and you are, Charlie, you're the winner.
Wow.
Congratulations, Charlie, you win. Charlie, thanks for playing. Enjoy Carl's voice. I'm loving it. I'm loving it. Don't you love it too? We want to remind everyone to join us most weeks here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Illinois. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org, and you can find the link at the website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Adam, listen to Bill.
It is a silly idea to think we'll have houses full of buttons.
That was an Amazon spokeswoman, which on Tuesday, the company Amazon released a new product to fill our houses with what?
Buttons.
Yeah, it's buttons. It's called Amazon Dash. There are these tiny little buttons that you affix to a cupboard or a pantry. They have brand names on them like Maxwell House Coffee or Tide Laundry Detergent. You push the button and you reorder food automatically because we have all been turned into rats pressing a button to get food.
Uh-huh.
It's really easy. You order these Dash buttons. You reset your order. You give them your address. You fill out the online credit card form. You allow 2 to 3 days for delivery, and bam!
Wow.
Yeah. It's almost like going to the damn store to get some toilet paper.
Hell.
Wait a minute, though.
I'm gonna be wearing a Maker's Mark button like a wristwatch.
Not if it takes 3 days to deliver. I'm
yeah,
not.
Just keep having it.
Paula, this week in an editorial in the New York Times,
yeah.
the director of the SETI Institute.
The SETI Institute?
SETI, SETI Institute.
Yeah.
Proposed a bold new plan to make first contact with aliens.
Oh, yeah.
So the director wants us to send them the aliens what? So that they could get to know the best of us.
Oh. Flowers.
Big Macs.
I'll give you a hint. The first thing they'll do is check out the Earth's Facebook page when we send them what?
The whole World Wide Web?
All the internet,
We're
yes.
We're sending them the whole internet?
We're sending them the internet.
Man, if they would just keep it, I would love them.
And if this won't keep them away, nothing will. Yeah.
We were going to visit your planet, but then we came across your comment sections.
It is true. The aliens will think we humans are terrible, but the cats are lulls. I'd like to say a quick thank you to one of our sponsors, Stamps.com. Stamps.com helps businesses avoid time-consuming trips to the post office. With Stamps.com, you use your own computer and printer to print official U.S. postage for any letter or package, and then the mailman picks it up. No more wasting time going to the post office or wasting money on expensive postage meters. Right now, listeners of this podcast can use the promo code WAIT for a special offer, a no-risk trial, plus a digital scale and free postage. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and type in WAIT. That's Stamps.com. Enter WAIT.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. We're playing this week with Paula Poundstone, PJ O'Rourke, and Adam Felber. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago. Fill again for Peter Sagal, Mike Pesca.
Thank you, Bill. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hello, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, Mike, this is Joe Gallagher from New York City.
How you doing, Joe?
Hey, Joe.
Hey, how's it going? I'm doing well.
What do you do there in New York?
I'm an actor-turned-lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going well.
So you're a traitor. You're a traitor to the arts, Joe.
Exactly, yeah.
Call back when it's going to be a lawyer-turned-actor.
Yes, that might happen.
We'll circle of life it with you, and we promise to do that. It is nice to have you with us, Joe.
Thank you, Mike.
You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. What's the topic, Bill?
It's The Odd Couple.
First, there was Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau, then Bill and Hillary. But this week, we read a story of an even more surprising celebrity odd couple. Our panelists are going to tell you all about it. Guess the real story, and you'll win Carl Kasell's voice on your voicemail. First up, it's PJ O'Rourke.
Barack Obama and John Boehner are pals. I mean, well, what would one be without the other? It's obviously a buddy act like Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, although I'll leave it to the listeners to decide which is which. Anyway, they plan it all out ahead of time. Barack will do something that angers John and makes Obama look good to liberals. Then John will have a snappy comeback that angers Barack and makes Boehner look good to conservatives. And then they go off and have a cigarette and a good laugh. And, you know, I've actually never talked about this before. The reason I know
that they're friends is that an old buddy of mine happens to be a caddy at Burning Bush, where the two play golf. Now, golf, of course, is the main bond between Obama and Boehner. But my caddy friend says that they also talk about, of all things, rap music. He says that this is the only time that Boehner and Obama actually argue. The president's a two-pack guy. The speaker likes Biggie Smalls. So if you're ever wondering, if that hyper-partisanship in Washington is just a put-up job, the answer is no, not when it comes to Tupac and Biggie.
All right, MC John Boehner and ASAP Barack Obama from PJ O'Rourke there. Your next story of an unlikely pair comes from Paula Poundstone.
The family members of William Hanna of Hanna-Barbera fame have discovered a wacky treasure trove of letters exposing the oddest duo since Tom and Jerry, William Hanna and George Orwell. They met in the lobby of the Hotel du Jeu de Paume in Paris while Orwell was doing research for Down It Out in London and Paris, which put Hanna off soup for the rest of his life, says Hanna's granddaughter, Susan Suomo. Orwell was charmed by Hanna, who was fascinated by the world of the future. They sparred over predictions. "Surely you jest," says Orwell in one characteristically dark letter. "Even if they someday make sprockets, workers will never be able to survive on the wages from such an industry." "Listen, my young friend," Orwell says in another missive, "shopping on a computerized communication device would be all well and good, but surely with the use of such a miracle machine, the government will find a way to monitor every move of its pacified citizens." In some of his most prescient writing ever, Orwell tells Hanna, "Knowing you, you'll write a story of the future that will far outstrip my lowly scribbles. Do me a favor, though, my friend. At least put a secret government listening device on the family dog's collar."
All right. That's Hanna, not Anne Barbera, but Hanna and George Orwell from Paula Poundstone. Your last story of a mismatched pair comes from Adam Felber.
You wouldn't think of Russell Crowe as being the victim of a lot of pranks. He comes across more as the guy who dangles you from a fourth-floor balcony by your underwear. But in at least one relationship in his life, Crowe was mercilessly pranked over a period of years, and his big bad tormentor was Michael Jackson. Jackson apparently found out the name that Crowe used when he stayed in hotels and would call his room with repartee like, "Is Mr. Wall there? Is Mrs. Wall there? Are there any walls there? Then what's holding the roof up?" In a new interview in The Guardian, Crowe reveals that the king of pop was unrelenting. Quote, "He'd ring me up and in a strong voice say, 'There is an emergency and you need to leave the building.' I'd ask, 'Who is this?' And he'd say, 'Do not worry, Russell. Just kidding. This is Michael.'" This gets even weirder when you consider that the two men didn't actually know one another. "Never met him, never shook his hand," said Crowe. Crowe also complained, "You're supposed to grow out of doing that, right?" Which makes me wonder what part of Neverland he doesn't understand.
All right there, Joe. You've got Boehner and Obama going at it over mad beats. You've got Hanna and Orwell. That's Paula's story. And there Adam was telling you about Jacko and Russell Crowe. Which one do you think is real?
I think I have to go with Adam.
All right, you say Adam. To find out the correct answer, we spoke with someone familiar with the real story.
Russell Crowe says that for 2 or 3 years, he was getting endless prank phone calls from Michael Jackson.
That was Laura Stampler, a reporter for Time, and congratulations, Joe, you got it right.
Thanks so much, Mike.
How'd you smell it out?
Oh, I read that story.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what I do in my hours at my desk, is just scroll through celebrity blogs.
And he billed a client for that.
Exactly. Yeah. No. Don't hold me to that.
You earned a point for Adam, and you've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your voicemail, Joe. Way to go.
Amazing. Thanks so much.
And thank you for playing with us today.
Bye, right, Joe.
And now the game where people who do one thing really well
are asked to do something else entirely. Joining me now is a Chicagoland native, Jeremy Piven. His early roles include one of the guys at the Gas and Sip and Say Anything. It means nothing except to those of a certain generation to whom it means everything.
Yeah.
Most of us know him for crushing it as Ari Gold on the HBO show Entourage, and he's now starring as the title character in the PBS series Mr. Selfridge. We have a clip from that show. Mr. Selfridge, that is simply not how we do it here in England.
Wow. So we've exceeded our clip budget, have we?
Yeah. We didn't get the rights. Hello, Jeremy. How are you?
By the way, that's the way they should do clips from now on.
Yeah. Jeremy, I know that your parents ran a theatrical workshop for many years here in Chicago. Would I qualify?
You would begin at the bottom, indeed.
So Ari Emanuel, that's who Ari Gold was based on, the super agent Ari Emanuel. I assume you've met him. Now, when you do, playing a real person or someone based on a real person, what's your strategy? Do you try to like pick up things from his performance that you could use in yours, or do you try to wall off the two and keep them separate?
Well, if you're lucky enough to have the genuine article right in front of you, you steal everything you can from them. And I was lucky enough to have him as my agent for a while. And so, you know, agents hold the key to our livelihood. I mean, they're the ones that connect with the writers, directors, producers, studios, and whatnot. So we're in constant contact with them. So unbeknownst to me, I was doing my research for all those years as an actor, you know, observing Ari Emanuel. And, you know, he is, you know, brilliant and driven, ambitious, reactive, overly emotionally invested human being.
You know what I just want to go back to for a second, Jeremy?
Yes.
You're supposed to talk to your agent every day?
Yeah.
I do a radio show about once a month on NPR. Are you supposed to talk to your agent more?
Well,
maybe that's what I'm not doing right.
Well, listen, you get your agent's attention when you can. And it just is kind of ironic that, you know, I was a guy who was probably 40 movies into my career, totally under the radar when I started Entourage. And actually, after the second season, I won the Fresh Face of the Year award at 37.
Wow. Boy, you must have been under the radar. I had no idea you had done 40 films.
Yeah,
wait, what were they?
Exactly. Well, you know, movies like Black Hawk Down with Ridley Scott and,
right,
and Singles and Say Anything and,
okay,
you know, Family Man with Nick Cage. And I actually could do all of them for you if I was there. But
We have clips.
Well, Jeremy, now you're living in London. We hear that you've met the royal family. What was that like?
You know, I every year I go to this polo match, and Prince Harry and William play in this game, and they're ridiculously good. So good that I had to ask the players afterwards, are you letting them score on you? And they said, no, that these guys are really that good. And these guys, they're playing in a pro league, and they're scoring. So they're great at what they do. Prince Harry afterwards kept calling me Ari, and it was a little awkward. But, you know, I don't know what the rules are over there, so I thought I could be beheaded. So I never corrected him.
If they say it, they're right. It becomes law. That's a good thing about them.
Indeed. But those guys are incredibly humble, and they're, you know, there's a reason why they're loved. I mean, they're really totally present. Cool people that just happen to be royalty.
Oh, yeah.
You say it like you know.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's my experience.
Tell us about Mr. Selfridge. I've seen a few episodes. My parents have seen them all. They love this. I guess I'm telling you what the PBS demographic is, but it's about this London department store guy. So what is he, like an equivalent of the guy from the Men's Warehouse? What are we talking about here?
No, he's incredibly fashionable. He basically helped to invent the department store. He made his bones at Marshall Field's there in the Midwest, in Chicago. He's a guy that came up with those big windows that we all see in the department stores now. He came up with the idea, that the phrase, the customer's always right, you know, 200 days till Christmas, bargain basement sales. Those were all his concepts. And instead of competing against Marshall Field's, he went over to London in 1908 and built this mecca to shopping. And he's a guy who between 9 and 5 was kind of brilliant in what he did, and then at night he was a slave to his urges and his demons and was a disaster. I'm about to start season 4, and we'll kind of draw the whole thing to a conclusion. And the Brits do it differently. It's a very finite amount of time they want to shoot, and they feel like they can get the series done in that amount of time, as opposed to, you know, doing 14 seasons of 2 and a Half Men. You know, they go about it differently.
Well, anyway, Jeremy Piven, you mentioned that your character, Mr. Selfridge, invented a phrase, and based on that, we have invited you to play a game that we're calling...
The customer is always wrong.
Oh, Jesus.
So Mr. Selfridge, as head of the Selfridge department store, popularized or coined the phrase, the customer is always right. We've discovered that's not always true. Answer 3 questions about customers really blowing it, and you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice on their voicemail. Bill, who's Jeremy Piven playing for?
Michael Palagonia, formerly of Phoenix, but currently living in Abu Dhabi.
All right, Jeremy, here's your first question. Despite their smug confidence, even Apple customers can be wrong, as in which of these real incidents at an Ohio Apple store? A, in 2009, a customer frustrated with his iPhone pulled out a gun and threatened to shoot it. B, in 2011, a woman confused at the concept of the Genius Bar refused to leave until they served her a genius drink. C, in 2008, a man was charged with destruction of property after setting the iPod display table on fire, yelling, "Zune forever." What really happened, do you think, Jeremy?
I think that setting it on fire is what we all want to do. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I know that we do have a problem with guns.
Mm-hmm.
But I think realistically we have to go with B.
B, huh? Because, you know, this was an Ohio, USA, America type reaction to a frustration. So you'd say B?
He's got a funny look on his face, Jeremy. Okay.
We do indeed have a problem with the accessibility of handguns.
And you are correct. It was the gun.
Wow.
Well played.
Yes, yes. Luckily, Donald Goodrich was wielding a Glock 4, and the Glock 5s had just come out, so the old gun just stopped working. All right, here's the second question, Jeremy. Last year, a British woman, unhappy with her haircut, responded by calling the police. How did they respond to this situation? A, rushing to the store to tell her that her hair, quote, looks fantastic. B, sending a sketch artist to provide the hairstylist with an image of what the woman should have looked like. And C, arresting the hairstylist until the woman's hair grew back. What do you think it was?
I think it was the sketch artist.
You think it was the sketch artist?
Boy, I'm going to stick close to you during the lightning round.
Yeah, me too.
Well, let me ask you, what was A again?
A was rushing to the store to tell her that her hair, quote, looks fantastic.
I think that could be the only possible option.
It was A.
This is uncanny.
5 police officers responded to the distress call. 5. After Susanna Zayron refused to pay for her dye job, the officers did their best to convince Mrs. Zayron that she looked great, that neon blue really fit her winter color palette. All right, last question, Jeremy. Just this week, a Texas Whataburger customer may have taken things too far when he did what? A, angrily demand breakfast at dinner time, quote, like any self-respecting fast food restaurant would provide. B, he decorated his truck to look like a police cruiser and, using the lights and sirens, skipped the drive-through line. Or C, walked out with 85 balls from the playground ball pit in his pants. What do you think he did?
I want it to be C.
The balls in the pants, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I want.
Uh-huh.
So why can't I just go with C?
I'm going to let you go with C. You ready to go with C, Jeremy?
Yes.
It's B.
Well,
It's the police car. Michael Chico was enjoying his Whataburger. I mean, how could you not? It is right there in the name, Whataburger. When a real police officer pulled him over and said, "Nice truck, I'm with you. These burgers are great." No, I'm kidding. He arrested the guy.
Wow.
All right, Bill, how did Jeremy do?
Well, we let you go with C because if you get 2 out of 3, you're still a winner. And you are 2 out of 3.
Yay! Congratulations. Jeremy Piven is starring in Mr. Selfridge on PBS. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Jeremy. See ya. Just try to keep my customers satisfied, satisfied. Deputy
Sheriff said to me, tell me what you come here for. This episode of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is supported by Trunk Club, a men's outfitting service. After signing up for Trunk Club, you'll be matched with your own personal stylist who, after getting to know your preferences, will handpick a selection of premium clothing, pack it in a trunk, and ship it straight to your door. Trunk Club now lets you preview what's inside your trunk before it ships, so you don't have to wait until your trunk arrives to see what your stylist has picked for you. You only pay for the clothes you keep, and shipping is free both ways. Get started at trunkclub.com/wait.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. We're playing this week with P.J. O'Rourke, Paula Poundstone, and Adam Felber. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, filling in for Peter Sagal. Here is Mike Pesca.
Thank you, Bill. In just a minute, Bill satisfies the rhymal urges in our listener limerick challenge game. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. But right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Adam, the UK election is next month and campaigning is well underway. So in a desperate bid to appeal to younger voters, Prime Minister David Cameron revealed what this week?
His tattoo.
Not as classy. Maybe it's that his last name might have been Cameron with a K. Keeping up with the Camerons?
He revealed his penchant for watching reality television.
Even closer than that.
The Kardashians.
He revealed he's related to Kim Kardashian. In an interview with Heat Magazine, which is the UK equivalent of the New York Review of Books, Cameron was asked if he watches Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Quote, "Did you know I'm 13th cousins with them?" Some careful digging by genealogy website Genie.com traced the link back to Sir William Spencer, born in 1555. The poor guy, it was really hard for him to find a suit of armor that fit his curves.
Wow. Yeah. 13th cousins.
Yeah.
That's really reaching there. Yeah.
Aren't we all 13th cousins?
I was about to say, technically we're all 13th cousins. And this is a reunion.
Paula, toy company Mattel has announced it's releasing a new Barbie this fall. She's fresh, she's modern. What's so special about her?
Oh, she talks trash.
She does?
Yeah, it's trash talking Barbie.
I'll give you a hint.
What are you wearing?
She's actually replacing an earlier outmoded dial-up connection Barbie.
High-speed internet Barbie?
She's Wi-Fi enabled, yes.
Oh, gee, Monique's. Will we just cut it out with this stupid computer stuff? Have we not driven ourselves totally insane? I mean, I didn't like Barbie to begin with. Maybe they belong together. But I don't hate her, you know. Years ago, there was somebody who was making a documentary about Barbie. And they called me up and they asked me if I would come be interviewed for their documentary about Barbie. And I said, yeah. I don't know why she thought of me. Maybe it's the dream car. But when I got there, it became clear that she didn't like Barbie and she wanted me to speak out against Barbie. But she didn't just not like her. She was like, oh, you know, you grow up with a bad body self-image. And she was putting a lot of her personal baggage on Barbie, I felt. And I came to Barbie's defense. I said, you know, I don't like her, but I'm not jealous of her, for heaven's sakes.
She's a plastic doll.
Honestly, get over it. over it, for heaven's sake. On her best night, she slept in a box in the closet. You know? Yeah.
PJ, the new app, Clean Reader, scans your e-books and replaces every profanity with something PG-rated. But authors are complaining that it replaces every racy reference with one specific word. What's that specific word?
Every racy word,
yeah?
With...
Not the top, but the...
bottom.
Yes, yes. Clean Reader is billed as a tool for parents who want to protect their kids from the damaging effects of literature, but free speech... but free speech advocates say it's censoring language and doing a really bad job of it in the process. So it uses bottom for everything below the waist, every private part.
Wow.
It changes the...
So does my son.
Who is how old?
He just turned 7.
Pretty much every word below the belt gets turned into bottom, which is confusing, but it gets really weird when it goes the other way around and bottom gets replaced by those words. We'd have Dannon fruit on the yogurt. And I think that's odd and not right.
Right.
Yeah.
What is it called now? Boy, that's going to make a mess. what is it called now?
Fruit on the bottom.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds messy too now.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for that rhyme. If you'd like to play on the air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924, or click the Contact Us link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending the weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming show at Wolf Trap in Virginia, July 23rd. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Marcy Vorosicki calling from Dallas, Texas.
Hello, Marcy. What do you do there in Dallas?
I'm an elementary school librarian and a mom of 4 kids.
And wow. Do you allow them to read what you allow the kids in the school to read?
Yes, yes. Anybody can read whatever they want.
Well, what kind of librarian are you? That seems a little...
You're
doesn't seem
supposed
specific
to be the gatekeeper.
Enough.
Yeah.
All right. Well, welcome to the show, Marcy. Bill Curtis is going to read you 3 news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on 2 limericks, you are a winner. And here now is your first limerick.
Using deep sonic blasts, we have found a big fire won't have to be drowned. Now a fireman's job is to make the bass throb. We can blast out a fire with...
sound.
Sound it is.
Yes.
Crazy.
Students at George Mason University have found out a way to put out fires using only sound by aiming 30 to 60 hertz of deep bass at a flame. They were able to successfully vibrate oxygen away from fuel. This is great. Firefighters will save thousands of gallons of water, and Bill Curtis will be able to extinguish the fires he starts in the loins of all our listeners. All right, here is your next limerick.
Evolution progressed by degrees. Herding cows beat out climbing in trees. We were hairy and scary until we found dairy. We got smart once we learned to eat...
cheese.
Yeah.
There you go.
There are all sorts of theories as to why mankind started eating cheese. A caveman was eating a typical dinner of round tomato bread when he realized it needed something extra. Whatever the reason, scientists have determined once we began digesting lactose, we made all sorts of agricultural and technological advancements. If not for cheese, mankind would never have invented the cheese wheel, which led to the regular wheel,
right,
which is useful in transporting loads and loads of cheese.
It all comes together there.
Yeah, it does.
How did they come up with that?
I don't know.
Yeah. They left the milk out overnight. That's how they came up with
that's
that.
But if that were the case, then you would just eat leftover milk. But that,
well, that was sour cream. Then they left it out for another. It was a bachelor invented cheese.
How long this been here? I eat it anyway.
Here now, your last limerick.
The stone I brought in made the vet balk. In this 70s fad, I should get stock. Chia, beware. This needs even less care. That's why I will invest in the...
Pet Rock.
Yes!
Yeah!
He just died, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. This week, we mourn the loss of Gary Dahl, inventor of the Pet Rock. For a few months in 1975, millions of Americans paid $4 for a box with a rock in it, and that was it. As far as pets go, it ranked above a hamster and below a dead hamster. Do you remember the Pet Rock?
I remember the Pet Rock.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I never had one. I wasn't responsible enough.
Mine ran away.
Yeah. My parents said, yeah, we're going to get the Pet Rock, but you know who's going to end up feeding it?
Bill, how did Marcy do on her quiz?
She got them all right.
Way to go, Marcy.
Yay.
Thank you so much. All right, bye-bye. Thanks. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is worth 2 points. Bill, can you give us a score?
Paula and PJ each have 2. Adam has 4.
We flipped a coin. Yeah. Paula got it right. It was heads. So you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. This week, Governor Jerry Brown ordered California's first mandatory blank restrictions.
Water.
Yep. After serving 5 terms as the senator for Nevada, blank announced that he wouldn't be seeking re-election.
Harry Reid.
Yep. Stanford University announced Thursday that it would offer free blank to families making less than $125,000 a year.
Free blank. I'd like some.
Yeah.
What is it? The shots for it to prevent disease.
Oh, and you mean inoculation.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tuition.
Oh, free tuition?
Yeah. A high school teen who received a rejection letter from Duke this week responded by blanking.
Going to Stanford for free.
The answer is writing Duke a rejection letter of their rejection letter. On Monday, Jay-Z relaunched Tidal, his new high-quality blank service.
Music buying service.
Music streaming.
Thank you.
Yes. Investigators found that a sinkhole that had been snarling traffic in Dublin was caused by a blank.
Let me think about this. A kid digging in Hawaii.
The answer.
Ring that bell.
Yeah, ring that bell.
Prove it's not.
The answer is an old tunnel politicians used to sneak over to a brothel.
Right to a brothel.
Yes.
Oh,
brothel
of course.
Yes.
I just didn't want to say brothel on NPR.
Yeah. Bill, how did Paula do?
She got 3 right for 6 more points. It gives her a total of 8 and the lead.
Hey, okay. PJ, you are up next.
I have the lead.
Hey, yeah.
Okay.
In the number.
PJ, fill in the blank. On Thursday, terrorist group Al-Shabaab took credit for an attack on a university in blank.
Kenya.
Yes. Iraqi military forces announced Wednesday that they had reclaimed the city of Tikrit from blank.
ISIS.
Yes. 7 years after the trial began, Italy's highest court overturned the murder conviction of blank.
Knox.
Correct. Yeah. Amanda Knox.
Amanda Knox.
On Tuesday, President Obama lifted the 2-year freeze on sending military aid to blank.
Egypt.
Yes. After being found unconscious in her home, legendary singer-songwriter blank was rushed to the hospital.
Joni Mitchell.
Joni Mitchell, yeah. Yes. After a 2-year shutdown, CERN announced they'd be restarting the blank this weekend.
There's that giant molecule collider.
Sure,
thing.
Yes, yeah. The Large Hadron Collider.
Yeah.
During a live news broadcast, a TV weatherman in Minnesota complained about his suit being too tight before realizing blank.
That he was fat.
That he still had a coat hanger in his suit.
comes to us all.
Local weatherman Steve Frazier had just started giving his forecast when he began to complain that his jacket was too tight. After a minute of squirming in his chair, he reached behind him and pulled out the coat hanger that he'd forgotten to take out of his coat. He then calmly finished the weather, reinserted the hanger, and hung himself up so he'd be wrinkle-free for tomorrow's broadcast. Bill, how did PJ do?
He got 6 right. 12 more points. He has 14 and the lead.
Oh, no.
Oh, oh boy.
All right, Bill. So that means Adam needs how many to win?
5 to tie and 6 to win.
Yikes.
Okay, Adam, this is for the game Fill in the Blank. After just 2 days of testimony, the defense team for the blank bomber rested their case.
Boston Marathon
bomber. On Wednesday, a federal grand jury indicted New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez on blank charges.
Corruption.
That is right. Comedy Central announced Monday that South African comedian Trevor Noah would be the next host of blank.
The Daily Show.
Yup. In England, a blind man collecting disability benefits was accused of fraud after he blanked.
Read his bank statement.
Got a perfect score at a darts tournament.
Oh, yeah.
On Wednesday, Cynthia Lennon, the first wife of blank, passed away at 74.
John Lennon.
That is right. Police in France suspected that a man was intoxicated when they found him blanking on the beach.
Oh, he was drinking wine.
In fact, he was performing mouth-to-mouth resuscitation
on a rubber raft.
On a rubber raft.
I read that, yes.
That he thought was a person. When police found the man at 4 a.m., he was frantically trying to breathe life into the inflatable rubber raft, and he had already called the fire department for help. Police were eventually able to bring the man back to the station to sober up, but not before he attempted to outfit one of the officers with an outboard motor and ride him into open water. Bill, did Adam do enough to win?
Well, he got 4 right, 8 more points, a total of 12, but he could not catch PJ this week.
There we go. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is supported by Citrix GoToMeeting. With a new flexible layout, GoToMeeting is designed to work the way you work. Meet face-to-face, share screens, share your ideas, and work together in real time. For a 30-day free trial, visit GoToMeeting.com today and click on the Try It Free button to get started. In just a minute, we will ask our panelists, now that we've mended our relationships with Cuba and Iran, who will we make friends with next? But first, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, benevolent overlord. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Miles Dornboss. Technical direction, Lorna White. Our CFO is Ann Nguyen. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, who will we make friends with next? PJ O'Rourke.
Indiana.
Paula Poundstone.
Canadians, Mike. If we're going to sell McMuffins all day long, we're going to need to suck up to the Canadians for the bacon.
Adam Felber.
Yes, that completely non-ridiculous haircut really does make you look taller, President Kim.
Well, if any of that happens, panel, we'll tell you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Bill Curtis. Thanks also to PJ O'Rourke, Paula Poundstone, and Adam Felber. And thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Mike Pesca. You can hear me on my podcast, The Gist. You can hear the usual guy back here next week. This is NPR.